Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Boland.
Ben, we're back today with part number two. I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, I'm excited, too. Let's hope we don't make it a three-parter.
Yeah, we've got a couple of these races, these exciting last laps that we want to cover again. Mm-hmm. And I think, last time it went pretty well in it, but we just ran a little bit long, right?
Well, because we were having so much fun, which is a great problem to have. We strongly suggest that if you are just joining us now, that you go back and listen to the first part of our podcast before you listen to this.
Yeah, and not that you're going to miss anything, but I think that what you would miss is some exciting last lap moments, right? Because I think all of these up to this point have been, well, to me, very exciting, and we've got several more here to cover. So you want to jump right into it?
Yes. Without further ado, here we go. You sent a note to me with this one, the 2012 Talladega 500. I'm just going to read this quote. There was a restart, three laps to go. All hell breaks loose on the final lap.
That's the only way to describe it. That's the only way to describe this one, Ben. It's seriously, that's exactly what happens because, we're down to the final lap in the 2012 Talladega 500. Mm-hmm. It's in Lincoln, Alabama. It's a great big trialful raceway. It's a super speedway, so it's a really fast race. We get down to the last couple of laps, I should say, because this is important. You need to watch, maybe the last three laps of this
thing. Yeah, to see the build, yeah.
Yeah, because there's a restart with three laps to go, and the cars, God, this is amazing, at the speeds that they're doing, four cars wide on the Talladega Super Speedway. So this is really, tight racing, right? Enormous packs of racers. And I don't know how many cars left in the race at this point. There's still a lot. There's, I'm going to guess ballpark 30 cars left at this point in the race.
Yeah,
a lot of
fair.
Cars, which is a lot for that point in the race and that's what makes this one maybe interesting is because at some point in a NASCAR race, there's always a wreck that they call the big one.
Yep. This is one of the biggest of the big ones, too.
Yeah. And it usually happens, middle of the race.
Mid-race or something.
That's more typical. It's what usually happens because there's still a lot of cars on the track, like we mentioned.
Right.
There's a lot of dicing going on, a lot of people trying to drive their way up to the front,
right? Because they're trying to get their spot. It's still early enough in the competition that you can really make some progress.
Yeah, and with that much traffic involved, there's a lot that can happen, right? And we know how important drafting is, and how the lift on the cars is so unusual when you get that close at that speed, that it'll make the back end of another car light if you get up too close to the back end. And there's a lot that happens. So, early on in the race is typically when the big one happens or, somewhere midway in the race.
But of course, we're talking about last laps in this show.
Yeah, last lap. And this is so crazy because, we said there's 30 cars left or more at this point. But man, I don't know. It's like maybe the announcer said it best when the final lap, I guess. Mm-hmm. Remember four wide at this point, and still four wide into the final lap. We've got Matt Kenseth, Clint Bowyer. They're both making contact. On the second to last lap, there's a lot of shoving going on. Mm-hmm. So the white flag flies, and the announcer says, "We're on the last lap. Will they make it back?"
Yeah, and
how prophetic, huh?
Well, let's just go ahead and play the clip.
Stewart to the lead at the white flag. We're on the last lap. Will they make it back?
Well, he was fast the fast one. He's got the 29 pushing him here.
4 deep behind Stewart and Kenseth.
Yeah, Kevin Harvick's got some real help coming towards the front here.
Michael Waltrip in the 55. Into the picture. Pushed by Casey Mears. Kenseth with Harvick behind him. Oh, there's contact. Stewart into the middle of the pack and over.
Watch it out.
And a huge wreck to end this race. Matt Kenseth is going to get to the finish line first. Is everybody okay? One of the championship drivers got through.
As you can hear from that, the very unfortunate Tony Stewart
Yeah, this is what a disaster, huh? I mean, they ended up hooking bumpers, I guess. You know, there was some contact. Stewart's car ends up on its side, you know, in the middle of the pack. It flips up on top of someone, I think it was Casey Kane's car. And, you know, there's just it's a disastrous outcome for the end of the race. I mean, but very exciting. This is a turn four wreck.
Yeah.
At Talladega, or, you know, is it between turn three and four, maybe? Anyways, it was right near the very end anyways. And, I mean, this is so bad that, you know, of course, Kenseth, I think he kind of squirted out the front of this thing. He barely made it.
Yeah.
I mean, just barely made it out.
Right.
I mean, you saw the car right behind him was taken out.
Right. As were more than 20 other cars.
Yeah. This is a huge, huge wreck. Now, what happens in that case? Of course, the caution comes out immediately.
Right.
They did give the win to, Matt Kenseth. Yeah, that's right. But there was so much destruction, so much mayhem going on, and so much, you know, trying to figure out, like, who crossed the line under their own power and when. And, you know, there's no way to just look at this and see what happened. They had to wait to officially call the race until long, long after. I think NASCAR officials said they took an hour just to determine the final 15 positions in the first 15 positions in that race. I don't know how they even, you know, deciphered the rest of what was going on there.
Yeah,
it's a complex job.
Don't know either, and it's it really is a heart-stopping, unpredictable moment because, again, you know, it's not as if these are unprofessional drivers. It's just a very tight track. They're very high speeds, and there are a lot of cars.
Mm-hmm. And it happens because everybody's, you know, at that point in the race, you're getting desperate for a position.
You want a place.
Yeah, because you want, you know, you want more points. You want more prize money, of course.
Right.
And, you know, at that point, I think I heard someone say at that point, there's a point where, you know, you decide that, you know, I'm either going to win this thing or I'm going to completely lose it. Like, we're going to lose this car. You know,
that's
the point. I don't know how, I think I'm paraphrasing what they said, but, you know, at that point, it's like, if I see a gap, I'm going for it. And that's the way it's going to be.
Because if you don't perform well, you could lose your sponsorship.
Exactly. Exactly. So, want to move on to another open wheel racing incident?
Yeah, let's move on to something a little bit different, because the last few things we checked on were kind of big finishes, in that the person who got first place due to an unforeseen circumstance ended up clearly getting first place.
Mm-hmm.
But this one's a little different, right?
A little bit different, yeah. This one's got a couple little footnotes as well that I think we need to mention. But this one, we have to go back to the 1992 Indianapolis 500. And this one, for race fans, they'll know that this is the closest finish in Indy racing history.
Yeah, I believe it remains the closest finish.
The closest 1-2 finish in Indy racing history.
Fair enough.
I'm going to qualify that.
Okay? I was waiting for it.
So the closest 1-2 finish in Indy history. Now, you know, it's a 500-mile race, right?
Yes.
That's 200 laps because it's a 2.5-mile rectangular oval. So there's a lot that can happen in this race. There's a lot of time, a lot of distance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now, just to give you an idea of the speeds, now, this is a really fast race, the Indy 500. Even back in 1992, it was a fast race. They were still traveling at speeds of, I think, around 225.
Okay, and that's an average, and that's for two racers in particular,
you know,
or
what?
All racers.
I'm gonna go back on that for just one second.
Yeah.
That may or may not be true. The 225. I'm gonna have to check my notes on that
one.
But I, you know, super fast.
Excess of 200. Do you think that's fair?
Oh, definitely. Because when I was living there, there were an excess of 200.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking 225 is not far off. Okay. But again, that was like 14 years ago now at this point.
So we've got two guys with whom this story is concerned.
No, Ben, that was 20 years ago.
Oh, come on. Don't make us feel
20
old.
Years ago. Okay, this is 20 years ago. My gosh.
It was more than 20 years ago.
I got to work on my math.
It was like 21 years ago.
All right, so let me set the scene here.
Okay.
All right, so there's a battle between Little Al, who is Al Unser Jr., and Scott Goodyear, and it's happening over the last several laps of the race. Now, if you watch the video, clip that we're going to give you, you'll see the race with about 7 laps remaining, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Now, but even though that 7 laps, this is how fast they're going. That's 2.5 miles around. That's only like 4 minutes of racing.
Right.
So it happens extremely fast. Lap times are incredibly quick. Now, both drivers were in what they call full race gear. Now, that doesn't mean the way they're dressed.
Right.
That means they were in...
The gear of their vehicle.
Exactly. They were in something other than their economy or cruising mode.
Mm-hmm.
They were in, like, the full, flat-out, fastest an IndyCar can go gear.
It was opened up.
Exactly. Wide open, flat-out racing for the last several laps for both of these drivers, right? And I'm talking, like, a really... A tight, tight race. I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, kind of dodging, trying to get around the next driver.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interesting thing to mention here is that now Little Al, he got his start in go-karts and sprint cars. So he was kind of – he was really good at preventing somebody from passing them because
right.
that was that's, you know, the name of the game in those sports, right?
Yes.
Now, you do the same thing in any car, but there's a little more danger in that, you know, the open wheels and you don't want to launch over the car in front of you, that type of thing. But, you know, if you touch wheels, you're done pretty much. It can happen, but it's really rare that, you know, someone makes it through that without ending up in the wall.
There's a reason that it's not an accepted and common strategy.
Exactly. So, you know, he's really good at doing this. But on the final lap, now there's no lap traffic to worry about or anything like that. Mm. You know, they're all on their own here. Goodyear finally starts reeling him in because, you know, there's a little bit of different distance between them. And eventually he makes his move on the front straight. Now, he tries to pass on the inside, but Lila holds him off for the win.
Mm-hmm.
But barely, and I mean barely, when I say barely, I mean like a matter of feet.
Right. In a different equivalence, this could be maybe one coarse horsehair of a difference if you're talking Indy, because it's less than a car length.
Yeah, I can tell you how close it was.
Yeah?
Exactly. Now, I'll tell you that if you're watching from the stands, it may have been confusing as to who won. It was that close, right?
It's like a photo finish.
It's pretty close. Now, I mean, you got to remember, like, something passing that quickly, it's tough to get that straight in your head what you're seeing at that
yes.
moment. You almost have to see a photo of it afterwards or really think about, like, okay, he was ahead at that point. But here's how close it was. The margin of victory was 0.043, well, I'll just say it, 43 thousandths of a second. At speeds of like 225 miles an hour is what we're talking
mm-hmm.
about. Now that distance, now, just to give you an idea, at the time in 92, the scoreboard there at the Indianapolis 500, they didn't even have that kind of speed. They didn't have that measurement of,
oh, wow. of
time. So that the, you know, it said the interval between like the first and second place car.
Sure.
The interval read 0 seconds.
Ah, because it would usually go down to what, hundredths?
No, actually it read 0.0 seconds.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was up to tenths of seconds. And it just had never been, you know, necessary up until that point. Now, I mean, if you just think about this, the Indy cars, they travel at a length of a football field in like 1 second at that speed.
Right.
So that's a huge distance. I mean, if you envision that in your mind, how far how long a football field is, that's 1 second of travel. So when you're saying that these cars, well, they finished, within one car length of each other. You know, they were side by side. They were abreast during the final, mm-hmm. the final moment there. That margin of victory is extremely tight.
Well, let's go ahead and play the clip.
They make the turn for home now on the main stretch. Scott Goodyear closes in. He looks for a place to come by. Scott Goodyear drives it, but no. I believe that's the closest finish in Indy history. Closer than the race 10 years ago with Gordon Gaughan. Rick Mears 10 years ago when Little Al was new to this track. And now, Al Unser Jr. is a winner at the Indianapolis 500.
If you're watching this, now I know you listen to it, but
right.
if you're watching this, and I encourage you to watch it,
yeah.
you'll notice at the end of this thing that, you know, during the live coverage of the event, they didn't actually show the finish.
Yeah, because they're like, what? Huh?
No, it's so strange. It was like they were on the outside edge up by the flag, mm-hmm. the flagman.
Right.
And as he waves his flag, there's a guy with a card in the way as well. But for whatever reason, the camera didn't follow the cars across the line. I've never understood this. Now, you had to wait until a few minutes after the race, and then mm-hmm. they finally got to a better view of, because the people at home, they only heard what happened. They only heard who was the victor. They didn't see it happen
right.
until several minutes after the race when they went to an infield shot, which clearly showed who took the victory.
Right, because of the angle of that shot.
Exactly, so. Exactly. So just an incredible, incredible finish. I mean, so Little Al ends up with the victory,
mm-hmm.
but just barely.
Yeah, just barely. And one thing that gets me about racing, and I hope we don't get hate mail for saying this, this is going to come up in a race we're going to talk about in a minute. No amount of training will absolutely guarantee you immunity from bad luck. It's completely true.
That's true. Or you know, maybe just a dumb move from someone else. You know, you're trying to drive as defensively as you can.
And the car in front of you flips.
Exactly. You know, it's just, there's a point where the momentum just takes over, and that's, you just have to let it play out. All that energy has to just dissipate and be done, and that's it. You just have to let it go.
Right.
All right. So, you know what? I've got one quick thing that I need to mention here that's related to this, because I mentioned this is the closest 1-2 finish, right?
Yes, you did.
Now, in 2003, so we're talking 11 years after this, there was the closest IndyCar 1-2-3 finish ever. And this one is even tighter than the 1-2 finish.
Do you have some numbers for me?
I do. There were three cars that finished. And I tell you, Ben, this is a true photo finish. I mean, even looking at the photo, it's kind of like you almost have to squint to look at it to see who won. It's that close. The margin of victory in this one was 9. Now, the last one was, what, 43 thousandths of a second? That was pretty tight.
That's tight.
The margin of victory in this one, 99 ten thousandths of a second. 99 ten thousandths of a second was the thing. They finished three wide at the finish line. This is in Chicagoland in 2003. The race was the Delphi Indy 300, so it was the IndyCar series. And it was Sam Hornish Jr., Scott Dixon, and Brian Herta finishing in that order. But if you watch the clip of that one now, this one is kind of a bonus add-on thing that we didn't really set up, but the video is really poor on this one. For whatever reason, the only thing online that I could find was it looked like it was dubbed from a VHS or something.
Yes, we're probably going to skip the clip on this one.
I would think so, yeah. It's just, but they finished literally inches apart. The nose of their car were inches apart off the line.
It was 99 ten thousandths of a second.
It was, yeah, exactly.
If anybody is thinking that name sounds familiar, yes, that's the same Brian Herta we mentioned in our first story on the Corkscrew Pass.
Exactly, yeah. So he's been involved in a couple of dramatic racing moments here.
You know what? Since you brought up drama, maybe we can go to something a little bit dramatic. This is kind of a sad one.
Yeah, it's a sad one. I don't know how much time we'll spend on this one. Not a whole lot, because we've talked about this, I think, in the past, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Okay. We have. We've talked about this. This is the 2001 Daytona 500.
Yeah, and I guess the way I qualify this one here is it's a long-awaited victory for one driver, right?
Right.
And the end of a career for another one, the death of a NASCAR legend, really.
Yeah, really. So this is Michael Waltrip. He's the victorious one, and it took him a while to get there.
Yeah, happened at Daytona Beach in 2001, and a while, that's an understatement, Ben.
Yeah.
Now, he had, gosh, look at this. Michael Waltrip had 463 starts up to this point. With no win.
Yeah, that's more episodes than we have.
463 NASCAR starts,
no wins.
I mean, maybe he's got a second place thrown in there. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But no wins to this point. Now in this particular race, he led for just 27 laps of that 200 lap race. So, you know, he didn't lead for a lot of that race. He was somewhere back in the pack. But what made this really, really interesting is that, now, a couple things, really. His brother, Darrell Waltrip, who we've also mentioned earlier in this podcast, he was the announcer for the race. Now, he's a NASCAR announcer, obviously, but he gets really choked up in seeing his brother just about to take his first NASCAR win at the Daytona 500, which is, you know, that's a big deal. That's a pinnacle.
That's
a major, major win for somebody. So he's getting very emotional during the last lap. He's cheering him on, you know, through the whole thing. He's coaching him from the announcer's booth, you know, like, come on, Mikey, you got it.
Do you want to play a clip of it now?
I do.
Schrader has climbed out of his car. He and Earnhardt crashed together, leaving turns 3 and 4.
But there's something else that happened.
Yeah. Now, as you heard, you know, in turn four, there was a quite a pile up, and what happened was, now that everybody probably knows at this point. That was that was the infamous wreck that that took out a NASCAR legend, Dale Earnhardt. That was his that's the wreck that did it right there. But you know, one thing is that you know you'll hear in Darrell Waltrip's voice the excitement and the you know the thrill of the victory.
Right.
Also a little bit of concern, you know, what's going on in turn four, and you may think like, well, that you know he's not really caring too much about what's going on in turn four, but when you look at Earnhardt's wreck, and I think anybody can agree this, didn't look all that serious.
Right. People did not know that there was a death on the road.
No, no. That wasn't known for some time, as a matter of fact. Mm. I mean, it was known that it was serious later, and I'm sure that at the track, word got around quickly.
Right.
Now, the fans, the guys in the booth, I don't know if they knew early on or not. I'm not sure exactly when everything happened, but you'll hear Darrell. You know, he's just so excited for his brother's win. And you can see that, you know, that there's the whole victory circle thing going on. And, you know, it's very exciting and everything. But no one really knew. I mean, and if they did, you know, it wasn't made official. It wasn't announced at that point that Earnhardt was already dead at that point. I mean, that accident, it didn't look as severe as it ended up being. So, okay. Our first Indy 500 of the two that I want to wrap up with here. Comes to us from the 2011 Indianapolis 500. And I guess the best way to title this one is it's an unexpected win number two for Dan Weldon, right?
Yeah, and one of the reasons that it's unexpected is because the person that they thought might be able to take the prize here actually crashed.
Yeah, yeah.
But non-fatal crash.
No, non-fatal, so. but just a heartbreaking moment at the Indy 500.
Yeah, because he was a rookie.
Completely shocking. Yeah, because here's J.R. Hildebrandt. Mm-hmm. He's a 23-year-old rookie driver from California. He's on his way. He's got, I mean, it looks like he's got this thing in the bag, right?
Yeah, he's super far ahead. He looks, the only other person is Dan Weldon.
Again, 23-year-old rookie. Dan Weldon, who's way behind, you know, this is how far Dan Weldon was behind. He wasn't really even mentioned in the final lap, if you notice, until the finish. I mean, until that point, he was so far behind, it was just not even thought of. So the whole last lap, really, is all about J.R. Hildebrandt, the announcer audio, in that, you know, they say they've got half a lap to go, you know, and they're getting all excited. They're saying, you know, things like, does he have enough fuel to go the distance? You know,
that's the big question.
That's the excitement. So you're thinking like, okay, there's a little bit of that involved, a little drama there, but probably not.
But you're thinking done deal.
Yeah, it seems okay. And then they say something like, all right, he's got half a lap to go. He's got just half a lap to go to become the Indy 500 champion. And then he comes around the final turn. So he gets into, you know, the fourth turn. He goes just a little bit too wide because he's passing a slower car.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've watched Indy ever in the past, but if you go just a little bit too wide into any of the turns, you get off into a gray area that they call the marbles.
Yeah, and that can be a punishing experience.
Exactly. And the marbles are just the tiny little bits of rubber that have collected on the outside edge of a turn where you know, the rubber is scrubbed off of the wheels, and it makes these tiny little balls of rubber that are just like marbles. They're super slick. Mm-hmm. And there's just nothing you could do to control your car at that point. You've lost traction with the road. And so he's coming around turn four, and again, just 2 feet a little bit too far to the right, and he just slams into the wall hard.
Yeah, just a few feet can, even just 1 foot can make a huge difference.
And no one can believe it. I mean, the crowd, you know, the crowd's on their feet at this point. They're cheering
for
this.
Yeah, they're like pre-cheering.
This is a rookie driver that's going to take the Indy 500 in 2011. It's a great story. And, you know, people are super excited. The announcers are excited. You know, it's all happening. It's all coming together for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He slams into the wall, and no one can believe it. They're all, you know, there's this moment where no one's like, everybody's like, what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
He's got three wheels left. He's sliding along the outside wall on the main stretch, and he's headed towards the finish line. And it looks like he's going to win, even though he's still grinding his car against the wall. I think he's still on the throttle at that point.
Right, yeah, let's go ahead and play the clip just a little bit.
Right, here they come again through the final two corners. J.R. Hildebrandt, there's more traffic. He's got to get around the left traffic. What are they doing now? Unbelievable. Oh my goodness. welded after finishing second the last 2 years, wins when J.R. Hildebrand hits the wall coming out of four, just as Scheckter did.
What a tremendous finish. What a drive for Weldon.
You hear that, you know, as he's making his way, or he's grinding his way towards the finish line, Weldon comes up from nowhere and passes him with literally, like, I'm going to guess, like 100 feet before the finish line. He passes him and wins. And I'll tell you how unexpected this was and how quickly all this happens. The announcers don't even realize that Weldon has won the race until Weldon is almost into turn one. So he's already, like, seconds past the finish line. They're like, I think Weldon just won. I think he or something like that. You know, it's an amazing moment. And, you know, of course, Hildebrand does cross the line. Yeah. In fact, he crosses the line and the car continued. The momentum takes him all the way into turn one where he hits the wall again hard.
Yeah.
Which is tragic. I mean, not tragic, but, you know, it's awful that it happens
again. He did survive.
Yeah, but he is so, you can just see when he gets out of the car, he is just heartbroken. I mean,
wouldn't you be?
And the crowd feels for him.
Yeah.
The announcers feel for him. He was literally like, I'd say a couple hundred yards away from winning the Indianapolis 500 as a rookie. That would have been enormous for his career.
And let's do some background on Weldon, though, because this was his second Indy 500 victory, but for the past 2 years, Weldon had finished second. So I think that gave him a lot of motivation there.
Yeah, it gave him quite a boost in his ego, I'm sure, at that point, you know, to win the 500 for the second time. And also, you know, just that, you know, this is the big one.
Getting second place is,
yeah, sure,
especially if you're in racing, getting second place is something that everybody else is going to tell you to be very, very proud of. But, you know, as a racer, you'll be okay with it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
how long can you be okay?
It's never quite the same as when you're holding that BorgWarner trophy and it's got your face on it. You know, that's really cool. But, you know, one sad note here is that this victory in the Indy 500, now, you know, there's all this excitement around it. You know, everybody's cheering for Dan Weldon and, you know, they're showing his wife, they're showing everything. You know, it's really, really exciting.
Yeah.
This is just a few months before his fatal crash at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway in October of 2011. So, you know, we're just several months away from that at that point. And, it's just tragic to see it. But, you know, interesting to note that, you know, all of this happens so quickly in racing like this. I mean, you're on the top of the world at one point, and the next moment, you know, you just never know what's going to happen.
Which brings us to our last of the last lap.
Which is very, very similar. Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, the only reason that this is our last one for today is because we're running out of time.
That is, you guys, that is literally the only reason.
I mean, there's so many of these we can cover like this, and I think maybe we should in the future. Anyways,
I'm all for it.
But this is just 1 year later. A similar situation happens. It plays out a little bit differently at the end, but what we've got going for 2012 is, I've got to make one very, very serious comment here.
Okay.
I've got to extend a word of caution to anybody that's going to watch the video clip. And I don't know if you know what I'm going to say here or not, Ben, but it's not for the squeamish. Near the end of the clip, just so people are prepared for this.
Yeah.
If you stick with the clip all the way to the end, and I apologize for this, I'm really sorry, listeners, but you're likely to see Ashley Judd in the pits. And I just wanted to be prepared for that. So Ashley's there. She's the wife of Dario Franchitti. So just be ready for that.
Just brace yourself.
Yeah, brace yourself. Be ready. I don't know how you feel, but there you go.
You know, I'm glad that you put that word of caution in there. We'll hope that everybody can move on with it and check it out. But let's not dwell on the bad stuff, Scott.
Okay.
Let's not dwell on the unfortunate events. Let's talk about the good ones.
Okay, so here's the good one. All right. Here's the setup. There's a driver, his name is Takuma Sato. And he actually, you know, this is kind of the last few laps of the race. He races up from like fifth place up into second place. He's running a strong race all day, right?
Uh-huh.
So he gets up into second place, and this is just a few laps prior to the finish. This is where it kind of everything goes wrong. Now they're now, I guess if we want to go back, I'm kind of jumping around here, but Tony Kanaan, who gets involved in this as well, he and Scott Dixon and Dario Franchitti, who are both Chip Ganassi Target teammates. You'll see they're driving like a similar car.
Right.
They've traded positions a few times. Now, Sato, finally, like I said, he comes up to second place, right?
Uh-huh.
With about two laps to go, he has this great pass on Scott Dixon into turn one, which probably, now that I think about it, it probably gave him some kind of, confidence, I guess, that he can make a pass in turn one like this again.
Right. Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Now, we get to the final lap. Now, so he's made this pass, this amazing pass in turn one, you know,
right,
around Scott Dixon, and all he's got left to go is through Franchitti, mm-hmm, and he's got this thing wrapped up. And I don't know if you're familiar with, like, the last race or the last lap of Indianapolis, but whoever is in second position, that's the place to be on the last lap in Indy. If you're within striking distance.
I think that it's good that you say within striking distance, because a lot of the first position in the last lap is just trying to keep your place, man.
That's right.
Those other people are after you.
You'll see that they're constantly watching their mirrors. They're trying to block,
yeah,
but not being, not going outside the rules. It's a really tense position to be in the lead with someone right behind you on the last lap, especially mm-hmm in this race, because so many victories have come and gone, I guess, in that first and second position, because there's something called the slingshot maneuver where they draft behind him, and at the last second they
yep
pull out to the side. And this is happens on the final stretch often in Indy. They'll pull out to the side and just shoot past the former leader for the victory. And it happens
all
the time.
I've seen you do that in traffic.
Yeah. Okay. So right. You've been watching, yeah. So, all right. So, again, now, according to the announcers at this point, Sato is what they call in the catbird seat. Now, this is the place to be, right?
Right.
They say that, you know, he's got, at this point, position two is where you want to be at that point, right? So,
right,
so he's in the right spot as they're entering the final lap. Now, the white flag flies.
Right.
And the crowd, of course, is, you know, they're super excited. They're standing. It always happens where they're standing at the end of the Indy 500. And I'll be honest, Ben, I'm standing at home. When I'm watching the final seven or eight laps of Indy,
uh-huh,
I can't sit down. I pace. I uh-huh wring my hands. I get very excited at the end, at
talk
the end
to the
of
television.
Indianapolis. I do.
Sato.
I don't do that for any other race.
Sato's got his dander up.
He does. Yeah, he's very excited because, you know, he's raced up from fifth into second, mm-hmm, and, you know, he just made that great pass.
And he has a shot at one.
So the white flag flies,
uh-huh,
and way, way too early, he dives into turn one on the inside of Franchitti. And this could have been bad for multiple reasons,
right,
not for both of them.
Yeah.
Now, Franchitti gave him a full car width because he saw he was coming up on him, gave him a full car width just as he's supposed to in the rule book. The problem was Sato lost the rear end of the car. It just went a little bit squirrely on him.
Yeah, and so he spins out.
He spins out. Now, if you listened when I said he's on the inside edge of Franchitti,
yeah,
and, you know, the banking and the momentum and everything that's pushing them out, normally that would take out Franchitti as well. It's a miracle when you watch this. It's just a miracle how he spins out, and it just happens exactly the right way that Franchitti is able to travel on his way, and Sato spins out right behind him, in between he and Dixon, into the turn one wall. And, of course, the day is over for Sato.
Yeah.
The caution comes out,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, the final lap is run under caution, and Franchitti's the winner.
And this is funny because when I was watching this clip, oh, we should play the clip first. When I was watching this clip, it reminded me of, you've seen The Matrix, right, Scott?
Yes, I have.
It reminded me of Neo, Keanu Reeves' character, sort of dodging bullets there,
yeah,
with that pass attempt.
And
I think Franchitti was lucky.
And the crazy thing is Franchitti, he had like a, he really didn't have much control over it at that point. I mean, he was allowing the pass to happen on the inside, which was
dangerous.
He did
everything he was supposed to do.
He really did. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. But for Sato to lose the car and not take out both he and Franchitti and possibly Dixon behind him, that was amazing. I mean, it was a clean wreck, I guess, if there's a way to put it. It was bad for Sato, great for Franchitti, great for Dixon.
And of course, Sato survived.
Exactly. Yeah. It was fine. It was just, he had just taken, you know, he just went into it way too early. He should have waited, if, you know.
Like turn three, maybe?
Yeah, maybe turn three, turn four even. And I know it's tough to wait that long. And that was the thing is, like, where do you make that move? He had, and I think that, you know, the earlier pass on Dixon in turn one probably led him to believe that, you know, he had what it takes to pass in turn one.
Yeah, the momentum.
Exactly. But there's so many places that are better to pass at Indy than turn one. I'll tell you that. I'm surprised that he pushed it that way. And one last little note here, because I think we've wrapped this up. We've spent way too much time on these, probably.
Oh well, we hope everybody enjoyed it.
I think it was an interesting one. It was good. But here's an interesting note that you'll hear probably, I think, if you listen to this clip, is that all three Indy 500 wins for Frank Keady have come under caution. He's won three times. Three times at Indy, all three under caution.
Wow.
Yeah. Strange fact.
He's technically a cautious champion.
A cautious champion. That's a good way to put it. So there's a million more of these, Ben. We could do this all day.
Yeah, and we want to, as a matter of fact. So please feel free to write to us and give us some more suggestions about heart-stopping racing moments. You know what, Scott? I'm going to open it up and say it doesn't even have to be last lap stuff. Let us know about some of your favorite racing moments.
Sure, and watch for some clips. We're gonna post some clips somewhere.
Yeah, we'll be posting these.
Where are they going to be? The blog? They're going to be at Facebook?
Let's shoot for the blog. Let's put them on the blog. We'll link to the Facebook and the Twitter.
Yeah, why not?
And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. You can befriend us. We do write back to people. We love hearing from you. You can also give us a suggestion for upcoming topics you want to hear more about. And you can send us an email at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.